accession number 28411, reel 3.
This is the second reel of a taped interview with Pell Williams in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 10th of the 8th, 2005, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Pell, we were talking about your arrival at Julius Camp. What do you recall of your arrival?
Well, we arrived about 3 in the morning, and it was raining cats and dogs, so... Rain over there is pretty heavy. It's not just a mist or something. And we'd all been locked up in these cattle trucks, as we call them, 8 to a carriage and all their gear. And we have a lot of short fuses. You know, we all had to detrain. And it was right adjacent to our camp, which was Jules. But, of course, once that soil in Syria gets water on it, it's just cakey, thick mud. Our tents were all ready and the camp was all ready, and so we could move straight into our allocated tents, about a section, which is about 10 or 12 blokes per tent. But what they'd forgotten to do, of course, is dig rain trenches, drainage trenches around the edges of the tents, and of course when we got in, inside the tents, it was all full of water. And I can tell you that until daylight, when things could be organised, there was a lot of noise and cursing and abusing. No one was rational. Anyway, come early morning and the rain had gone, and we had to get all our stuff out to dry it and sit on the wet mud. Anyway, that was our row. We had breakfast and so forth, and eventually settled in with drains all around our tents. And we were in Jules, I suppose, for, that was when, November, or about 5 months, I suppose, where we did a lot of battalion training. Palestine was pretty ideal for infantry training because there were a lot of ups and downs and wadis and all over the place. So you can for battalion manoeuvres. We also had some brigade manoeuvres towards the end, but it was very pleasant 4 or 5 months where we got leave. Jules, they had the whole brigade, the 21st Brigade was in that camp, the 14th alongside us, the 27th were not far away.
So you were talking about being on relief. You had a cinema nearby?
Yes. Which was all good. We had to... take the bolts out of our rifles, and when they're in the tents overnight, in our tents, with a chain running all through the guard for the trigger, because of the wogs stealing them, or potentially stealing them. I don't think they're exactly hostile, but they couldn't be trusted too much. So we felt that they were sooner we weren't there, but they weren't hostile to us in any way. They just didn't seem to accept us, and I think they liked the look of our rifles.
Okay, now, talking about, obviously, the locals, they had a reputation for being interested in your rifles, and as I understand, they pinched quite a considerable number of them.
I can't confirm that they pinched, stole any, but the potential was there, and we had pretty strict security. Each battalion was responsible for their own security. We had obviously guards 24 hours a day. When I say their interest in the rifles, that was the sort of we anticipated that it would be. I, I don't remember anyone losing any rifles. They're pretty well secured when they went round your shoulder on your route march or something. But no, they were up. There was a few orchards not far away which were out of bounds, and of course everyone goes there and hops into them and gets a feed of oranges and so forth. If they said it was in bounds, I probably wouldn't have gone in there. We got Lee was pretty, I thought, fairly liberal. We'd day leave to Tel Aviv, to Haifa, to Jerusalem, I suppose about once a month or something like that. There's one occasion, we had a bloke in our battalion, in our company, called Ron Christmas. And he was a very dry character. And he had very buck teeth, very teeth that absolutely protruded. And we all reckon he cleaned his teeth on the inside all the time, pushed them out. Anyway, he was a very dry character. And he, on Christmas Eve, of course, I think they allowed us a bit more than a ration of half a bottle of beer. Anyway, Christmas certainly got into someone else's, got pretty bright, and about 11 o'clock decided to shoot through to Tel Aviv, which is, I think, probably about 20 or 30 miles away. Probably hitchhiked. Anyway, got into the, continued on the grog in Tel Aviv, and of course, still under the influence on Christmas morning, the provost picked him up. He was wandering around the streets of Tel Aviv on Christmas morning and grabbed him and took him off to the police station. And of course, all you're supposed to give is your name, number and rank. And they asked him his name. He said, Christmas. Of course, being Christmas morning, they didn't believe him. I said, oh, come on, cut out that. And he said, no. My name's Christmas, and he was, you know, he's a sort of a bloke to egg them on a bit. Anyway, cutting a long story short, they held him and had to contact the battalion to confirm that they did have a Ronald Christmas with WX, whatever his number was. And, of course, he got put in the cooler when he got back to the battalion later that morning. But we had 3 weeks special duty, we being my platoon I was in, I was a corporal then, 3 weeks in Jerusalem. The Jerusalem MPs, which were 6th Division Australian MPs, were required up the desert. They didn't, our 7th Division military police hadn't arrived. And I had no idea how they worked out. 13th Platoon of 2nd 16th would be seconded into Jerusalem for 3 weeks, but we were there, and of course we went in there. We were supposed to wear MP military police armbands around here, and they were loathed in the army. They were just treated, I think, probably in any army, but they were certainly treating the Australian army as untouchables. And of course, as soon as we went out on duty, we were supposed to patrol here, and there's another sections stayed at home in case of emergencies. The other one had a day off. And as soon as we got out of sight of the our headquarters, which is a private home, empty private home, we took these damn things off because we had our colour patches on. We didn't want to be seen with our battalion colour patches and MP on. Anyway, it was while we were there that the battalion, a lot of the battalion, anyway, had a day's leave in Tel Aviv. We're in Jerusalem. And at any rate, of course, what first thing most blokes do is go in there and have a grog and have another one and another one. And by about midday, they're all, you know, pretty noisy on a day's leave. And one 16th bloke was arrested. And all his mates, I don't know what he did to be arrested, but it wouldn't be hard to work out, I suppose. All his mates demanded from the Palestinian police they let him go. Of course, they wouldn't. And again, cutting down a story, these blokes followed them, the bloke was arrested, to the Palestinian police station where he was taken in a paddy wagon. And a riot developed. The word went round. Telavive wasn't that big in those days, anyway. And all the blokes on leave assemble outside this police station. And a riot developed. They couldn't control it. Anyway, they got hold of Arnold Potts, who was second in command, and he came in and straightened it all out. And they all went back, and they were assembled. This is all while we were in Jerusalem. And he addressed the blokes next day and tore them to bits and diddle. And in the end, having done all that, he said, "Good on you for supporting your mate," and walked off. And, of course, next time, a few days later, some more 16th blokes were coming to Jerusalem. And we were supposed to be attending the bus when they got off with our colour patches on, but MP and MPs were red flag to a bull. And we didn't know how we were going to get on with our own battalion arriving. However, thank goodness nothing happened. They probably were told, or I don't know what, but they behaved themselves, thank goodness. They didn't take any notice of us. And I might add, we tried to make ourselves pretty scarce too while they were there, in case there's a problem. But we have very pleasant, and I got to know Jerusalem pretty well.
Well, you're mentioning seeing these interesting places, and Bombay and now Jerusalem. What was it like to be abroad in this scenario?
Well,
it was
a war. What was I, 22 by then? It was very exciting to, you know, see any sort of strange place, having never been outside as an adult, outside Perth. You know, another custom, different smells. It was really just an exciting adventure, as I recall it. Australians, I think, were a little bit brash sometimes, you know. They think they were there to save everyone and so forth. I don't know. There, in places like Jerusalem, there were many Tommies there. There were no Yanks. There was a lot of Europeans there that, like the Poles probably had, troops in England. And those sort of people. I don't think there's any free French, but there was a cosmopolitan lot of Tommies, and ourselves, of course, New Zealanders. They're even worse than we were. But oh no, it was, you know, we went and sort of explored the holy city. We probably didn't make as much as we should have, because you'd go and have a straight into the ruddy bar somewhere or a cafe and win the war.
And how did the locals see you, do you think?
Pretty hard to see it through those eyes. 60 years ago, Jews we couldn't get close to in any way. I think if the things were reversed, we wouldn't take kindly to a rowdy lot of foreign troops, not taking over your city, but occupying it pretty consistently. Mm. And I don't remember, Jaffa, of course, was the Arab part of adjacent to Jerusalem, and that was a totally different place altogether. It was, to my memory, not clean, but very old buildings anyway. And the Arabs in Jaffa didn't live that well. It's dingy, whereas Jerusalem, apart from the old city, had a lot of new, nice looking homes, and you know, it was rather clean. So was Tel Aviv and Haifa. But we probably didn't see the best of the Arabs. Jericho is an old place. And while we're in Jerusalem, as a matter of fact, the battalion, or the whole brigade, or the whole division, I suppose, moved down to a place called Dimra, which I only saw. We got back just in time to move up the desert, so I didn't see Dimra. Probably a bit like Jewelers, I suppose. But we did a lot of route marching in Jewelers. A lot of route. We had a 24-hour march once. You'd march 50 minutes, have 10-minute smoko, and I suppose we would have stopped for meals, and so it was a 24-hour march anyway. We had to march back into our camp at the end of the 24-hour march with our rifles at the slope, and a rifle in, I think, because everyone was absolutely shagged. No sleep or anything. We were pretty fit. And blow me down, when we got there, our company had to supply the guard, take over at 10 o'clock, I think it is. I've forgotten now. So there's not much rest for the wicked that day for someone. I wasn't on guard, thank God. But other manoeuvres, we were out at night crawling over those damn hills and shivering in the waddies. The waddies were a lot of dry waddies there, which are creek beds in our language. It got very cold there because we arrived there and they were, I don't know what they'd be. Yes, it'd be their winter. It was fairly hot. No, it wasn't. Their summer. We got some snow in Jerusalem, I remember. But it was a pretty good camp, really. And we were pretty fit by the time we went up the desert.
Hmm. Well, we can talk about that. What news were you getting about the greater war? What was going on elsewhere?
Quite frankly, I don't remember hearing much about the European war. We certainly heard about the Desert War. Now, how did we know about that? My guess is, a bit vague about this, that there was a bulletin issued by Army headquarters or something. But I don't really remember. But hand to mouth, you'd see a, particularly on leave, you'd see a bloke you used to know, or see a, having a drink with a 6th Division. They were all up the desert then. They'd tell you all about it. I don't really know how we actually knew about it. But we heard about the 6th Division chasing the Itais up the desert, and then the
Benghazi
handicap. Yeah, that's right.
Africa Corps came in.
And when we... no, the Africa Corps wasn't there then. It was mainly battalions. And a bloke I knew who was in the stock company I was in before the war, I remember he wrote back, he was in the 2nd 11th, 6th Divy, and he was just wrote back to Elder Smith's company and said that it was like herding up sheep. He was a stocky at Catani. It was like herding up sheep, the Italians. They just gave up in droves. You just couldn't handle the mobs. They were, and we saw a lot of them as we moved up there. We didn't get very far in the desert. We only got to Mirza Matruh. But we were out patrolling, and by that time the Tobruk had started.
Well, you hear of Bardia being taken and then Tobruk.
Yep. Bardia, Sidibarani.
Huge numbers of Italians giving up and being counted in the acre, literally.
The Italians?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then we have the Africa Corps coming in.
No, not when we were there. No, we'd gone to Syria.
Yeah.
And I think, had we gone to Syria? I don't know when they came in. But no, we weren't there then. It was the Itais. I think the Huns might have been just coming. Probably, I didn't know.
At the time, we have the British evacuate Benghazi because...
Now, what date was that,
that
you
was
know?
That was April of 40...
Oh, that's when we left the desert.
Sorry, 41. April 41. And obviously, we have the German forces invading Greece in that same beginning of that same month. Did you hear anything about that?
Yeah, certainly, yes, we did. I was lot to see a lot of wounded blokes come back. Yes, we heard about that. We heard that in general terms about the Germans invading. And was, we were in the desert in a place called Mirza Matruh, and we were sort of, I think, probably about reserve there, because Yeah, the Germans must have come up pretty well to where we were. We never saw any. We got bombed quite a bit there.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, presumably the first time you would experience enemy fire.
Yep.
What was that like for the very, very first
time? It really wasn't a big deal, from as I recall. We were certainly in the area. Our main concern was living in the damn sand with wind blowing and our permanent food was, well, seemed to be anyway, cooked bacon and greasy oil, which Sam got into. That's about all I can remember. I suppose it was tin dog and so forth. And we were right on the sea, but we went out patrolling, and we had wire to get through and trenches to live in. Moving up there, we got absolutely lost, the company did, because we got into a sandstorm. And don't ask me how we were, our OC of our company, Albert Caro, was supposed to find it. There was a compass, I wouldn't have a clue. The sandstorm, it was just absolute black, well, not black. Everything was shut off, red wall. And we got into the night, and we tried to still find out where we were supposed to go, and that got lost, and tempers got frayed, and, oh, God, that was a schmozzle. And when we did get to our trenches, which was out of Mersman, it was full of fleas. And so when we were in the dugouts and the holes and so on, we had these damn sand, I suppose they were sand fleas. Oh, they were fleas anyway. But no, nothing greatly occurred there. A few blokes shot through to Alexander, AWL. Got the cuts. Alexander wasn't that far away.
You were never tempted to do anything that rebellious?
I was in Palestine. I was battalion orderly corporal. Big deal, but still. 24 hours. There was an orderly officer, an orderly sergeant, and an orderly corporal on duty every day. And they'd go around and inspect the lines and inspect the tents and inspect this and the food and, you know, they were there. And I was this day battalion orderly corporal, and my friend Burgess, Doug Burgess, came back from leave. Full of the joys of life, hadn't worn off. And our, the 2nd, 28th and 9th Division, which is a West Australian battalion, Peter Sammons, had just arrived from Australia. And they are about 3 miles away, I suppose, in the next camp. And we had a lot of friends in the 28th. And Burgess said to me, come on, let's go over and... shouldn't have gone, of course, and see 28 blokes. And I said, Christ, I can't. I've got to put in a tattoo report at 10 o'clock. Oh, he said, look, don't you worry about that. He said, we'll be back long before then. He said, I've been on leave all day and I'm pretty tired and I want to be in bed. Well, of course, we go over there and get into the I section, one of our coppers in the I section of 28. Anyway, we got lit up with grog. At 1 o'clock, I said to Burgess, best I could, look, we better get back, you know, diddle. So anyway, we lurched out, about 3 miles to walk, and about 2 o'clock, going past an orchard, Burgess got taken short, had to go into the thing. He didn't come out. Oh, God, you know, I was beside myself because I knew damn well, and full of the joys of life as well, but I knew damn well we were in trouble. And I went looking for him, and he'd gone to sleep on the job. So anyway, of course, I was up before the beak next morning. And being a corporal, I had to have corporal escort. So then I went, and Burgess was also a corporal. He came, he escorted one side of me and another old mate of mine, Jimmy Lang, escorted, and I fronted the OC, Albert Caro. And he, oh, can't understand the corporal. Where were you? And didn't know, we told him. Well, at any rate, I got lucky I didn't lose my stripes. But I was permanent company orderly corporal for 3 weeks, which meant I had to do the tattoos and had to do all the rough work and go and, all, and oversee the canteen and so on. And I did that for 3 weeks. And that's about the only misdemeanor of mine, I suppose.
What were the consequences? of going AWL?
Oh, usually it'd be, depends on your track record a bit. You'd probably be what they call CB, confined to barracks, for a week, maybe a month, which meant no leave, and you had to report. Well, I don't know, I never got CB, but you had to report probably three times a day somewhere. I don't know. That was the main thing. But if you, if it was bad enough, you'd be demoted. Or Ron Christmas, he got a stripe, and he lost his stripe because of that, going to Jerusalem, which didn't worry him at all. There was a cooler there. That was one of the jobs of the guard. When you were on guard duty, it was to guard this, what we call the cooler. But you'd have to hit someone, you know, hit an officer or something. I think you'd be discharged if you hit an officer or sent back to Australia. Yeah. But mainly CB, pretty harmless, I mean, George. Mm. Plenty of blokes went AWL and didn't get caught. Yeah, I went AWL once in Haifa, that's right. Got back in time.
Had you heard much of what was going on, for instance, in Greece and Crete, particularly the evacuation of Crete?
Not really. Well, that was all happening when we were... I think we moved from... We were certainly Mersmatru when the invasion was on in Greece. And I think... And it was certainly... we moved away in May, I think, to go up to Syria. But we didn't hear much about it then. We certainly, I remember... see, it was actually happening. No radio and that sort of thing in those days, so we wouldn't have had any access to that anyway. No, we didn't hear about it mainly until afterwards, quite honestly.
Things are looking pretty dismal at the moment, at this time for the Allies.
Yeah,
you've got Greece and Crete happening, and you've got Rommel in the West, and sort of pincer action and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
What were you hearing about the plan to go to Syria, if anything?
Well, they didn't tell you much. I mean, we didn't know we were going to the desert, you could guess. We weren't even told we were going to the Middle East, but you could guess. It may have been England, but all you know is you pack up and you've got to be ready to end train at 1100 hours or something. But, you know, the bloody bush telegraph worked. You'd eventually know that... where you're going, I really can't remember when we were told we were going to Syria. I don't know whether we were ever told. I mean, we weren't told of the battle plan until we were actually just at the border, getting ready. I can't remember what the hell we did there. Very little, apart from get our ammo and all that sort of jazz. We were there for about 5 or 6 days, I think.
You know anything about the Vichy French?
Not beforehand. We knew all about them. And they were going to lay down. We got to wear a slouch hat and all. Here come the bloody Aussies. No, surrender. But that only lasted about a couple of hours, I think. We chucked our hats away and put on steel helmets. Christ. A lot of hooey that was. No, they were real. A lot of them were foreign legion in the Vichy French. I don't even want to get on with this. I know after Litani River, which is the first, the three battles really, the Litani River, which is a fifth swift flowing river. The next village up the coast was Sidon, which didn't have a river, but they were dug in there. It was a town of sorts. And the next one was the Damore. But at Litani, we just crossed the river. And we had to go out in the fighting patrol, we being our platoon, just to find out where the Vichy French had dug in, because they'd been pushed back in the river. Anyway, we got lost. Didn't find any frogs, and we got lost. We didn't have much of a lieutenant, that officer, and that was a chap by the name of O'Keefe. We used to call him Jungle because he was dense. So we were just told, there's only 10 or 12 of us, I suppose, and we were supposed to go out and find the bloody enemy. Anyway, we didn't. Pitch dark. We were told to just camp down, and first light we'd find our way back. And I happened to be near the slit trench. I thought, well, that'll do me. I'll hop into that. Be a bit warmer. And I hopped in there, and there was something nice and soft and furry, and I snuggled in. It didn't worry me much what it was or what it might have been or anything. Of course, when I woke up next morning, it was a dead foreign legion, Senegalese, as black as the ace of spades. Dead as a, you know what? And I've been nestling into this bloke all night, always in his greatcoat, whether he was on it. And of course, since I discovered what it was, I was out of there like a bloody shot. But he did have a nice pair of binoculars round his neck, which I brought home. I've given them to my son, otherwise I'd show it to you. That's and actually, these days, they're not much good. But it's the only souvenir I got out of the war. But he had around his neck, and he was a foreign legion. But he was black as a Senegalese.
What was the foreign? I mean, that must have been a pretty amazing experience for you to see your first dead foreign legion.
Oh, no. Well, I saw plenty of dead French, but I suppose I wouldn't have got any closer. No. Oh, no, there's plenty of. We saw plenty of dead French.
Well, what was, you mentioned